Blog Talk Radio.
And now,
you are listening live.
Handoff, Kennedy McCoy cuts it back inside. He's at five, heading to the end zone. He's in, touchdown! Drops, throws, has a man. Ball caught, Jennings. Gary Jennings breaks the tackle. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, end zone. Touchdown, Gary Jennings. And it is a great night to be a Mountaineer, wherever you may be.
Welcome to this live episode of the Smoking Musket Podcast. This is the call-in and review show, broadcasting live from outside the heart of college football. I am Bart Keeler, here to take your calls and listen to your opinions about the WVU Texas Tech homecoming game from Saturday. You can call us to interact live with the show at 917-932-1765 or tweet at Smoking Musket to share your opinions or ask questions. Whatever you want to do, this show is for you all to interact with Smoking Musket. Tonight, we are going to be talking about the good and bad of WVU's 46-35 victory over Texas Tech on Saturday. And believe me, fight the win, there was a lot of bad. And it's not great. But as much as I'd love to talk for an hour about how I feel our defense is not very good at all, I'd rather hear what you all have to say. So please call 917-932-1765 or tweet at Smoking Musket to, share your opinions, ask questions, call in, whatever you want to do. We're here to do it for you. So again, this is the Texas versus West Virginia review. Obviously, if you were around on Saturday and were in town for homecoming, you probably had a good tailgate. You got into the game and probably were very concerned quickly into that game because West Virginia did not seem to come with the A game. And we'll talk about that more later, but look, that first quarter, first half, not great. Not great at all. But luckily, West Virginia had a fantastic fourth quarter. 22 points in the fourth quarter, a total of 29 unanswered points for a come-from-behind win that we have not seen in quite some time. Final is 46-35, but a couple of things that we will talk about this is, one, the 28 points, a relatively okay day for special teams on our end. And four, a win over a ranked team for the first time in a very long time. So that is, those are things that we're going to have to talk about throughout the show. But again, call 917-932-1765. I would love to get your opinions. Excuse me. And had to sneeze, but then I didn't sneeze. Man, this weather has gotten crazy. Down here in Georgia, we had 90 degree temperatures this weekend. And today it was 70. So weird. I don't know. Anyway, again, that's 917-932-1765 to call in and talk to the show, or you can tweet at Smoking Musket with your questions. Again, we are live here on Blog Talk Radio. Thankful that we can host this podcast on this platform so that we can talk to you all live and get your opinions and questions. You can listen to our preview podcasts every week. They usually come out on Thursday or Friday, usually Friday. It just depends on when we record. So please look for that later on in the week and you'll be able to kind of get a good grip on what we're about to come up against on the weekend. But this is a live show. This is all about you all. So I will be happy to take your calls or questions if you have any. So as I was saying, probably not a great feeling after that first half. Let's start with the good, okay? Let's start with the good. West Virginia had a really, really good second half defensively. Specifically, we only conceded 7 points. We only allowed really two scoring drives. The second one ended in a missed field goal for Texas Tech. We'll get to that later on, but it was fine. I mean, look, our defense struggled in the first really three quarters, better in the third quarter, but struggled mightily for the first three quarters, giving up a total of 35 points. We had no real way to stop Texas Tech except for, you know, Michael Barden missing all three of his field goals. But in the fourth quarter, we looked decent. I mean, Tech only gained 16 yards. A lot of that was their own fault for penalties and all that kind of stuff. 12 total plays. I don't mean outside of punts. They only ran 12 total plays. They punted the ball twice in the fourth quarter, and their final drive was finished off by a very crucial interception by Kaiser White. So defensively, I don't know what necessarily Tony Gibson's adjustments were at halftime, other than simply execute better, because I think that was the key to this entire comeback, was just better execution. We were in it for them. I mean, we were in it throughout the entire game. We weren't super far behind, but it had the chance to get out of hand quickly. Specifically, when you look at our first drive ends in a punt, and Texas Tech goes immediately down the field after that and scores. So we're already down 7-0 after two possessions. So, you know, in the Big 12, you don't want to do that. But the third quarter nicely set us up nicely for the rest of the game. It came late in the third quarter. It was, you know, like 5 minutes to go in the third, but nice little pass to David Sills from Will Greer to finally put us within striking distance, because then it was 35-24. We're down 11 points. And somehow we're then able to turn this around. So we're down 11 in the fourth quarter. And Tech, you know, they really didn't have much to show. And there weren't three touchdowns from an offensive standpoint that were, you know, long, bomb, explosive plays. The Grant White pass, sure, touchdown in the fourth quarter. That was a long play, but it was what, 30 yards? It's not like that's an unheard of play. It wasn't like some of Texas Tech's touchdowns this game that were just, you know, real quick, here we go. But we had decent drives. We had a 5-play drive, a 6-play drive, 7-play drive. We scored quickly, but we were doing it efficiently and methodically, which I think is a good sign, if you ask me, because we were able to move the ball down the field better than we were at the beginning of the game. We weren't facing, it seemed like, a lot of the third and longs that we had earlier in the game. We were moving the chains pretty well, stay ahead of the chains, as, you know, a lot of coaches want to say they want to stay on schedule. We were doing that better in the fourth quarter. And what that allows you to do is take shots deep or take shots down the field and get bigger. A turning point in this game, though, I think, because the more I looked at this, the more I think it was not just a good fourth quarter by the Mountaineers. It was a good second half. We only, like I said, we only got about 7 points. We gave up a total of two scoring drives, and one of those was a field goal. But, man, if you look at what I think turned this around for us, it was the fact that Texas Tech, at the end of the first half, had a chance to really put this out of reach for West Virginia. They drove down the field, and with about, 5 seconds left, had a chance to get the field goal to go up. That would have been 31-17 at that point. You have to think that Texas Tech gets the ball back to start the third quarter. So that could have been huge for Tech. Barden misses the field goal. It was the second missed field goal of the game. So West Virginia kind of – it was bad that the defense – did well, but we committed a lot of dumb penalties and allowed them to continue driving down the field. And it was like, guys, you're doing everything right, but you know, there was a roughing the passer. There were a couple of stupid blown coverages too, and it was really frustrating because we should have done better on that drive. But Tech was able to drive down the field and get in a really, I mean, look, it was a decent field goal opportunity. What was it? It was Yeah, it was on our six. They even took a delay of game penalty to put the kicker in a better angle for the field goal. He still missed it. So with that, Tech isn't able to get points. Then they come out in the second half and they punt the ball. Three plays, negative 3 yards. And you're like, oh, crap, this defense looks all right. So that kind of series, if you will, the missed field goal and then punt, gave West Virginia's defense, I think, a lot of confidence. But more importantly, gave the offense a lifeline and said, all right, you're still in this. Because at that point, we're down only 28-17. You know, it's still 11 points, but with our offense and hopefully the defense that's improving, you're in it. It didn't click for the offense until the fourth quarter, but I think it clicked for the defense coming out of the coming off of that missed field goal attempt by Texas Tech in at the end of the first half. I think that really allowed the defense to get some confidence and kind of shake off the bad juju that they had carrying with them. Because if you remember last week against Texas Christian University, we looked decent on defense. I'm not going to say great, but we looked like a team that was capable of stopping people. You know, we only give up 31 points. A couple of those were because of, you know, that last drive was definitely because of some shoddy officiating, but you know, it wasn't a bad day at the office for the defense last time around either, but this first half was really bad. 350 some yards of offense in the first half. All these things just did not go well for it. But they turned it around in the second half, and that's a hallmark of Dana and Gibby making adjustments because both sides of the ball looked better. Let's see. Like I said, West Virginia held Texas Tech to 16 yards in the fourth quarter, only 12 plays. And the second half in total, they only had 149 yards, which is great because, like I said, they had, like, what, 350 in the first half, scored 28 points. That was not a good defensive effort in the first half at all. We were allowing players to get – we had players getting beat deep. Part of that is Hakeem Bailey who, you know, when Mike Daniels is out, Hakeem Bailey's in, and it is not our ideal lineup, not our ideal, you know, cornerback and defensive back lineup, but it's fine. He should be able to do better than getting beat all the time. Kaiser White, Al-Rashid Benton, David Long weren't making the plays that we needed them to. And quite honestly, those are the three guys on this team that defensively, if they're not in it to win it every game, if they haven't got their focus right, or they're not making plays for us. And I don't want to say focus right. That makes it sound like they're not doing a good job preparing for each game. But if they're not, you know, they're not making big plays, our defense is not playing well. And they finally did come up with some bigger plays. Kaiser White, that interception, I think that might be the play of the game. Maybe the play of the game is the Karan White touchdown catch to start the fourth quarter for West Virginia. But the White brothers came play in that second half. And Kaiser White's interception to me was a huge, huge moment in this game because, look, Tech still has a hugely dynamic offense. They are one of the, if not the best offenses in the Big 12. You know, maybe the numbers don't quite support that, but they're a very talented offense who had moved the ball extremely well throughout the day, except for that fourth quarter. They've got the ball, and yeah, they're down by 11, but you don't want it, even with, you know, 3-4 minutes left on the clock. Tech's offense can move, and it's not a huge or too great of a mountain to overcome for that offense, you know, 11 points in, what, 3-4 minutes. They picked up some momentum. They were moving the chains, and then – Shemanek throws the pick to Kaiser White, and that sealed the game for it. As soon as that happens, it's like, all right, ball game, this is awesome. were able to just run the clock out and kill the game. Again, this is the live call-in review show of the Smoking Musket podcast. I'd love to get your opinions on this homecoming win over Texas Tech. You can call 917-932-1765 to share your opinions live on the show. You can also tweet at Smoking Musket, and we will answer your questions there. No questions as of yet on the no serious questions as of yet from Twitter. We do have a question from Hunter Cook. You may remember him, our guest who previewed Texas Tech football last week. This man is, he's having some trouble dealing with life right now. I'll tell you that because this is a tough loss for Tech. But Hunter wants to know, this is kind of a joke, but I know he's serious. And there's this parody tweet that says, Twitter, here's a photo of my cute children playing with their new puppy. Aw. Get more replies. Quote, no, I didn't say Hiroshima was good. I just said it helped push the Japanese towards surrender. He says, why does this tweet describe Texas Tech football in a nutshell? Well, Hunter, I think what we saw from Tech on Saturday especially was, look at this really nice thing that we have going here, right? They were 4-1, ranked number 24, 23, depending on the poll you looked at. For all intents and purposes, should have won this game. They had an 11-point lead going into the fourth quarter, but before that they had, you know, a 18-point lead at one point during the third quarter. So Tech had everything nice and dandy, and then for some reason, I don't know why this happened for Tech, but I think they just, I don't want to say they took the foot off the gas pedal, because I don't think that was it, but I think they just, the execution level dropped and it rose for West Virginia. And when those two things happen in big time college football with two offenses that are relatively similar and two defenses that play very similarly, it comes down to execution. And West Virginia took their execution up maybe a notch or two, while Tech went down a notch, and West Virginia was then able to outplay them in the latter half of the game. So I think Tech, you know, they did this to themselves, and it was basically just a lack of focus at the end. And it's unfortunate for Tech, because I saw a lot of similarities in this Tech team, or I see a lot of similarities in this Texas Tech team and West Virginia's team from last season, the one that went 10-2 in the regular season. And I mean that because they're a very opportunistic, hard-nosed defense. And they are an offense that can move the ball incredibly well. And the combination of those two things will do damage in the Big 12. And I still think Tech, at 4-2, has a great chance to not necessarily play for a Big 12 title, because I don't think Tech or West Virginia necessarily has a huge chance. I mean, outside chance if things go right. But Tech's looking at a decent bowl game now. They're looking at going to maybe the Camping World Bowl, or, you know, maybe the Texas Bowl or something like that, a decent bowl game. And now both Tech and West Virginia are in this lock for the second tier of the conference. We will get into the Big 12 roundup later on in the show, but the way the other results played out, it set up well for both West Virginia and Texas Tech to take a true hold on that second tier in the conference. Because I think we see who our top three are. I think we see maybe who our middle three are, and we definitely see who our bottom 3 to 4 are, if you want to count Baylor in the bottom, but, you know, whatever. So, yeah, the second half was a lot better for West Virginia. It just came down to execution. Offensively, we were in a better rhythm, moving the ball better. We were, I think, in a good place, doing a better job defensively of just staying to our assignments. And that was why we got a very good push up front. We did a better job of getting to Szymanek in the second half, specifically the fourth quarter, but really the second half as a whole. It's why their offense slowed down. We did a better job defensively of breaking up plays and making tackles. A lot of the big plays for Tech came because we did not tackle well at all. And that's, it's been a problem for the defense all year. If you can't make tackles, teams are, I mean, especially in this conference, teams are going to run right past you. And we did a better job of that in the second half of making tackles and rallying the ball to tackle as a team. So for me, it was just kind of like West Virginia was slightly off for the first, came away somehow with 17 points in the first half. You go into the half down 17 to 28 for as poorly as the defense played and as weird as the offense was. I think at one point we had more, if I'm correct, we had more punts than scores in the first half at one point. Let's see, we had a punt, three punts and one. Yeah, okay, we had an equal number of punts and scores in the first half. That's not West Virginia. That's not how you beat Texas Tech, and that's why they were up 28-17, because Tech punted no times. Zero times did Tech punt in the first half. They had two missed field goal attempts, and you think about the three missed field goal opportunities that Tech had. That's 9 points. It doesn't win the game for them, but it certainly makes West Virginia's comeback much harder. And look, sure, the 22-point turnaround was great, right? But we were at one point down 35-17, right? That's an 18-point deficit. That's a lot bigger deficit if it's, you know, at that point, 27 points. If we're down 44-17, I don't think this team has it in them to come back. And that's not to say that the guys didn't have the right mindset or are soft, but that's a really, it's a really tough thing to come back from. But luckily, Tech missed three field goals, and I think it helped our defense and their confidence. Michael Barden, I don't know how you go from here, but you know, it just wasn't great. And luckily, West Virginia was able to capitalize. Let's talk a little bit about that 2-point conversion, though. That was really a nice play drawn up by, I don't know, I guess it was Spavital, but, you know, Holgorsen has shown throughout the season that I think his evolution to head coach Dana Holgorsen instead of head offensive coordinator coach Dana Holgorsen has paid off in moments like this. We knew that in that that Virginia Tech game that he had a 2-point play called or a couple called, because that's kind of how you do it. You go out there and you have a couple play calls and see what you like. But you knew that he had already thought about going for two. I think the TCU game, I don't know if he goes for two. I think he does, because on the road, I don't ever like going to, in the overtime on the road. But why not go for two there? You know, and a game that you feel like you should have won, go win it. Don't rely on other bad luck to win a game for you or lose a game for you. Right from the get-go, he said, hey, we're going for two here. And it was the right decision, because at that point, at the beginning of the fourth quarter, you're not really chasing points, because you do need to set yourself up with how little your offense scored that game. You have to set yourself up for as few scoring chances that you need as possible. Yeah, if you don't get the 2-point conversion, you're down 12. So you have to score a touchdown. But I'd rather be down 10 with a chance to then maybe score a touchdown and put us up by 14. And they have to score at the end a touchdown when their kickers miss three field goals versus, you know, having it was the right call. Dana made the right decision to go for two there. And it's not because it worked out. It's because you look at it and you go, okay, what are our options here? Either we go for two and we pull within 10, which is only a touchdown and a field goal left in this quarter. Because when we scored, it was like, 2 minutes into the fourth quarter. So there's a lot of time left. And you don't know if Tech's going to score again. You know, you kind of have to have confidence that your team is going to – your defense is going to continue. But you don't have that for sure. So I think it was the right call. I definitely do. I'm glad that Dana decided to go with that – decision, and it paid off, because I think it built up more momentum as the team went on. And eventually we're able to put 22 up in the first and the fourth quarter and come away with an 11-point victory. And it looks more convincing than it was. I know a lot of people are happy because we covered, and that's great too. And those are important things to mention. So all in all, the fourth quarter was great. The second half was really good. You know, you win the second half 29-7. Pretty good, you know, but you lost the first half 28-17, and the first half did not look good from a defensive standpoint. We weren't really stopping the run very well. We weren't defending the big pass plays well. These are things that you can't do in the Big 12. And this is the live episode of the Smoking Musket Podcast, live call-in review show. I am Bart, recording, broadcasting live here just outside of Atlanta. For all By Godders and Mountaineer fans everywhere, looking to talk about this WVU Texas Tech game. If you want to give me a call, please do 917-932-1765 or tweet at Smoking Musket, and I'll answer your questions on air. Let's dive a little bit into the stats, because I mentioned that, unfortunately, Justin Crawford, only 47 yards rushing. We did not have a great rushing day at all. We only ran for a total of, 44 yards. A lot of that is because Will Kirk got sacked a lot. He got sacked a lot. But Crawford, only 47 yards on 14 attempts. Kennedy McCoy, 35 yards on 7 attempts. A better yard for a carry average, but not a good rushing day. Texas Tech ran the ball extremely well. Outside of Nick Chaminet getting sacked for a loss of 19, they had 209 yards rushing. That's a lot for a Texas Tech team. And they've done a lot better, but Stockton had a great day, 97 yards. We didn't have an answer for him at all. It was very concerning. Luckily, we did not allow Tech's receivers to get too many big plays, especially in the second half. I think we did a better job of controlling them in the second half. TJ Vasher, sure, two receptions for 113 yards. That 60-yard touchdown catch was bad. But other than that, we kept them at bay, especially in that second half. We gave up some big plays in the first half, which is why we got ourselves on that 28-17 hole. We had Trey King with the 30 and John Stockton with the 29-yard run, you know, and you had the 60-yard touchdown pass to Basher. So big plays aren't like that, or why they scored 28 points in the first half. But other than that, Chaminet was able to find some of his favorite receivers. QT and Cantrell got their fair share of catches and yards, but figured out a way to contain them. And I think that was good. So Nick Chaminet's day, 24 for 39, 323 yards, 4 touchdowns, and an interception, sacked twice. Will Greer sacked 4 times, but still managed to out-throw Chaminet, 32 for 41, 352 yards, 5 toddies, and one interception. David Sills with 3 touchdowns increases that total to what now we're at 12. I think it's 12 now. I'm going to look that site up to make sure I'm 100% right. 12 touchdowns on the year for the man. He's still leads the nation, I think, in – let's see. I'm pretty sure he still leads the nation in touchdowns scored. I'm looking up these stats. We're the sixth best passing offense in the country right now. So that's good. I'm pretty sure it's 19. Let's look at the statistics. Individual passing touchdowns, receiving touchdowns. Yeah, David Sills, 12 receiving touchdowns, leads the nation. And tied for third with the most total touchdowns Kerryon Johnson and Rashad Penny lead the entire nation with 13 touchdowns. But those come from the return game. All right. Mason Treene at Mason B C H R E N E wants to know what's my favorite WVU team to play as in any NCAA game. So what year? Oh, it's the 2005-06 team with Pat White and Steve Slayton. That's my favorite team to play with because you had so much fun on that team. Maybe 2000 year that won't be mentioned just because you get Owen Schmidt involved as well. That's a lot of fun. So I think that might be what it is. Oh, how hard will West Virginia recruit Rhett Rodriguez as a receiver? Well, he is a dual threat quarterback, so I assume we're going to go after him pretty hard. Seems to be look, David Sills proven to be pretty good at that. Thanks for the question, Matt Kirchner. Appreciate it. You're executive tweeter most of the time on the Musket Twitter account, Rhett Rodriguez as a quarterback or as a receiver, probably. Is 2005 Louisville the best night game in Morgantown ever? Lord have mercy. You know what? I will preface this with this. I was born in 1989, so I was not around for any night games in the 80s or 90s, really. I remember the 90s not being very good. I remember the game that we beat Miami in 93. I will say I was at the LSU game in 2011. That was a pretty jacked up night game, to be quite honest. Let's see, what other night game? I don't know, the TCU game maybe in 2014. I think that's a good shout there. That's a question from Brody at _BrodyScott on Twitter. That might be one of the best night games in Morgantown ever, but I will say that that's because I remember watching that and being I remember how big of a game that was and how great that team was. So from that perspective, we'll go with that. I'm trying to think some other night games that were big but and electric, but we didn't get the result we wanted. That's a good question. I think we'll go with that 2005 Louisville game just because came out on top. And I remember specifically actually this game. I'm pretty sure it was this game. Yeah, because it was we got the 2-point conversion in overtime, and I was holding my little brother. I think this was one of my little twin brothers who are now 12. And I was holding one of them while watching the game. And when we scored the 2-point conversion, I think I screamed louder and yelled louder than I ever have. Look, another thing about that game, that's when we get fully exposed to Pat White. Another great comeback win, 17 points in the fourth quarter, if I remember correctly. Three overtimes. Yeah, we'll go with that Louisville 05 game. Colin Kelly says, at CGK 2005, Backyard Brawl 2011 was the greatest night game in Morgantown history. I mean, sure, but I think because it was the last Backyard Brawl in Morgantown, you know, I think that probably had more to do with it than anything, in my opinion, is just because it was a hugely important game for us. Questions you have, send it to me on Twitter at Smoking Musket or call 917-932-1765. I'll be happy to answer them all for you. Right now we're on the discussion of the best night game. I don't know what we're talking about night games for, Brody and Colin Kelly. We ain't got a night game coming up. We have one this weekend at Baylor. We ain't got one in Morgantown coming up on the schedule. It was announced today that West Virginia-Oklahoma State will be a noon kick because, I don't know. I have no idea why that's a noon kick. You have a team that's probably going to be 5-2 versus a team that's probably going to be 7-1. I think Oklahoma State, pretty sure they had, yeah. No, yeah, 7-1. They play Texas next week or this week. So yeah, 7-1 versus 5-2. That's a pretty good matchup, but in conference play, I don't know. Definitely won't get a visit from College Game Day with that. It's a little frustrating, but oh well. What are you gonna do? They don't like. Look, also, night games haven't served us well in the Big 12 at home. I'm just putting that out there. We have done much better in noon kickoff at night than we have any time at 3:30 or 8. So the game again against Oklahoma State, October 28th at noon, that'll be on a TV network to be determined. So they'll take the six. That's the other problem. We don't have a TV network. So who made this decision? Was this ESPN or Fox? We don't know. That's a true blue game. Obviously, we have Baylor coming up this Saturday at night. Any other questions? Again, tweet them at Smoking Musket or call 917-932-1765. Again, that's 917-932-1765. And call in and ask your questions or give your opinions live on air. Few more statistical breakdowns as we wrap up this show. Got about 20 minutes left for you to call in. Justin Crawford, Kenny McCoy, we said, not a great day from the running game for West Virginia, but all in all, decent day from our receivers. Gary Jennings, 9 catches, led everyone in receptions, only 68 yards. But again, look, Gary Jennings does his job best at making those short, sure-handed catches, and he does that. 9 catches, 68 yards, great. Caron White finally played like the man I wanted Caron White to be. A great day for Caron White, 8 receptions, 114 yards, 2 touchdowns. That long one, both of those coming in the fourth quarter, mind you. Great day from Caron White. I'm glad he stepped up and stopped playing timid. David Sills, 6 catches, 3 of those for touchdowns. They had him pretty well covered kind of more through the first half. Man, he got open on a couple touchdowns, he got open on a touchdown in both the, first and third quarters, and then again in the fourth quarter, that was the go-ahead touchdown. But not the biggest day from him, but 6 catches, 89 yards, and again, those 3 touchdowns that puts him atop all touchdown receiving touchdowns with 12 total. So good day for him. Overall pretty good. Marcus Sims, 6 catches, pretty decent. He's not used to seeing those, that many catches in a game, but he gets 6 catches for 72 yards, no touchdowns, but, I thought he was they had him covered over top, which is fine, but he did a good job of showing that he can catch the balls underneath and still make plays. He had a couple of really good extending play catches, a lot of yak for him to end the game against Texas Tech on Saturday. I want to take a break real quick. Gonna get some water, rest my voice for a second. I'll be back and we'll talk about the rest of the Big 12 conference. And if you have any questions or want to make some calls, do that again, tweet at Smoking Musket or call 917-932-1765. And I'll be happy to answer all your questions for you.
Been sitting there tipping back crown straight, working up the nerve and the words to say, to turn those eyes and that smile my way. No time to waste, 'cause you showed up and all eyes on you, shining like a diamond in a neon room. Every guy here wants to make a move. I better make a move, somebody else will. If I don't walk up and ask you your name right now, offer to buy you a drink, sit down, the day you look could kill. Somebody else will. If I don't take a chance on your lips leaning, slowly stealing your kiss like this, making your world stand still. Somebody else will. Somebody else will. Maybe you're a little bit west coast.
All right. By Godders, thanks for letting me take that little break there. Back here live on the Smoking Musket call-in and review show. Again, if you have any comments, questions you want to share, you can call 917-932-1765. You can also listen to the rest of our podcast on iTunes and here on Blog Talk Radio. They're all archived. If you have any questions you want to ask me, you can tweet at Smoking Musket on Twitter, and I will be happy to answer all of them for you. So let's move past the game. We won 46-35 over Texas Tech. Let's talk a little bit about what this means, though, because you know, this is one of those wins that I'm not saying it means a whole lot in terms of like, oh man, we're gonna win the league. You know, we're going to win the Big 12. We're playing in December. But what I will say is that this positions us quite well in the Big 12 conference for, you know, bowl selection order. We are now 2-1 in the conference, 4-2 overall. We still sit behind people like Iowa State, Texas, and Oklahoma State in the conference standings, which is fine. We're currently 5th, but 2-1, we've got a good chance to go 3-1 against Baylor this upcoming week and get to 5 wins before November, which would be critical for the bowl success of this team, because 8 wins is going to be tough, 7 wins is going to be real tough. A win against Baylor would make that very plausible. So I think from where that means going forward, it's just that this team figured out a way to win. We didn't play great, and we still figured out a way to win. We had one game this year where we played really well. I would say that would be the TCU game, and we didn't win. We had a game where we kind of didn't play great, but kind of did play great, and that was the Virginia Tech game, and we lost that one too. This had every opportunity for us to lose this game and lose to a Texas Tech team that is on the come up, but we didn't. We found out a way to win the ball game, and that's huge. We still need to shore up our defense, specifically the run defense, but overall, it's okay. I hope this gives our defense a little bit of confidence. You know, we were able to slow down one of the toughest offenses in the Big 12. We have more coming up. We only have better offenses to face. I mean, we've got Oklahoma State and Oklahoma still coming up. We've got an Iowa State team that somehow figured its way out. And we've got a Texas team who, you know, maybe doing decently. For Tech, you know, I don't think it really sets them back all that much. I think from a momentum standpoint, it definitely hits them a little hard, but they still have just about everything they want in front of them. I mean, they already have one of the toughest games out of the way, having already played Oklahoma State. So, you know, for them, hoping that they can also stay on track, because I would love to see Texas Tech do well and get to the bowl eligibility threshold again this season. Right now in the Big 12 too, we've got let's see, overall records, 1, 2, 3 teams already at 5 wins. TCU is already bowl eligible at 6-0. Oklahoma State at 5-1. We have one, two, three teams with four wins. That's Iowa State, 4-2, West Virginia and Texas Tech, both at 4-2. So got already six teams that should be bowl eligible. And then you have a Kansas State and Texas, you know, teams that should add to that. We should get eight teams bowl eligible this year. I only see Kansas and Baylor missing out, but for West Virginia, like I said, at 4-2, that's great. If we can get to five wins by the time October ends, that would be huge too, because November is not going to be easy. But if you get to five wins, I think seven's on the board. If you get to five wins, you know, I think we could see maybe eight. Who knows? It just comes down to how well this team can execute. As we saw Saturday, it's all about execution. And when our offense executes well and when our defense executes well, we're going to be a hard team to beat. And our special teams was all right. There's that too. So give you just a clear picture of what the Big 12 standings are like, because I don't want to confuse you all with this talk, but number one is TCU at 3-0 in the conference, 6-0 overall. Number two so far, we have, like I said, we have four teams at 2-1, but Oklahoma at 5-1, Iowa State 4-2, Texas at 3-3, Oklahoma State at 5-1, West Virginia at 4-2, all at 2-1 in the conference. Then you have Texas Tech at 6, Kansas State at 7, or excuse me, Texas Tech at 7, Kansas State at 8 at 1-2 in the conference, Tech 4-2, K-State 3-3. And then we have Kansas at 0-3, 1-5 overall, and Baylor 0-3, 0-6 overall. So that's how the Big 12 looks right now. West Virginia does pick up a win over a ranked team for the first time in about 10 tries. So that is good. We broke that streak that we talked about on the show last week. I know it was just the number 24 ranked team in the country, but it's still a ranked team. And beating them is paramount to getting national recognition, and you need that. We do come back into the top 25. We are at number 23 in both the AP and coaches poll, which is good. I mean, a lot of teams lost, but we looked – that fourth quarter, we looked like a top 25 team for sure. Second half for sure. So we're back there at number 23. We have a number next to our name. We should be able to jump up a few more spots after this week, because I do think we should beat Baylor. And by beating Baylor, we should be able to move up, especially if, you know, some other teams maybe lose. So we're in a good spot right now. I feel much better about this team. I definitely think that 7-8 wins is a very likely scenario. I think Bill C still has us the highest probability at 7 wins, which is fine. That'll get us a bowl game. But I still think his numbers don't like us, and I can see us winning 8 games here. That's just my personal take. I think we can, you know, if we can take off, if we can knock off Baylor on the road, we get Iowa State and Texas, two very tough games at home, or at least games that now prove very tough. We get them at home. So those two games at home will help. And then maybe we can pick off, you know, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. We get Oklahoma State at home too. You know, who knows? That could be the big upset of the year in the conference. But because I don't think the TCU-Oklahoma State game is now as big of an upset as people thought it was. Oh, TCU looks real good. Anyway, this is the live show of the Smoking Musket, our live call-in review show. You can call 917-932-1765 or tweet at Smoking Musket with your questions. We have about 10 minutes remaining. So I gave you the conference standings. Let me tell you how they did in let's look at how the Big 12 fared over the weekend. All 10 teams were in play. All of them played conference games. We know the score of the West Virginia Texas Tech game, but the scheduled noon kick between TCU and Kansas State was a little weird. It got postponed due to some inclement weather in the Manhattan area, and TCU just came out and out Kansas State, in my opinion. Kenny Hill had 27 of 37 for 297 yards in the passing game, but they were able to play disciplined defense, solid offense. They came out, scored, and were able to control the game after that. TCU 26-6 victor over Kansas State, who looks kind of not as good as we thought they were going to be. Definitely not playing Bill Snyder ball. And the Red River Shootout, or whatever they're calling it now because of PC reasons, Oklahoma finds a way to hold on against Texas. They definitely – they had a – what was it? I think a 17-point lead. Maybe it was a 20-point lead. At one point in this game, they were up 20-10 at halftime, and Oklahoma's offense did not look great in the second half. Texas, I'm sorry, they didn't look – offensively, they didn't look great the entire game. And I know everyone wants to jump on Sam Ellinger's, you know, jock, but – sure, 22 carries for 110 yards is fine, but look, they're still 3-3. Yeah, they're 2-1 in the Big 12. This is their first Big 12 loss, but Oklahoma didn't play well, especially in the second half, and Texas still wasn't able to get it done. They only scored 24 points. I don't think that's enough to get it done week in and week out against Big 12 teams. So Oklahoma, 5-1. Again, that only losses to Iowa State. It's not inexplicable, but poof, that was bad. Baylor 16, Oklahoma State 59. This one in Stillwater got out of hand basically all in the second quarter. Baylor stood tough, 7-7 at the end of the first, but then 28 points by Mason Rudolph and James Washington in the second quarter. Rudolph for 459 yards, 3 touchdowns. James Washington, only 6 receptions, right? 235 yards receiving and a touchdown. That's crazy. And a good day from Justice Hill for Oklahoma State. Baylor, 16 points is fine, but they're 0-6, and we can't lose to them. Iowa State, everything else before this kind of played out the way I thought it was. You know, I thought Texas-Oklahoma was going to be a tight game. I thought we could win a close one against Tech, and I thought TCU was going to give Kansas State more than Kansas State could handle offensively. And that all happened. This Iowa State-Kansas game shocked me. Iowa State, 45. Kansas, 0. David Montgomery only ran for 68 yards, but he had 3 touchdowns. Alan Lazard, 40 yards on 3 receptions. These are not massive numbers, Iowa State, to beat Kansas 45-0. Kansas was just bad. Peyton Bender, 8 for 19. Total of 18 yards. So then they bring in Carter Stanley. He goes 3 for 7 for 26 yards. Bender threw an interception, just not great. Rushing, Kansas had 62 yards of rushing and 44 yards. It's not great. Kansas had 3 fumbles. One of them lost, but this Iowa State team didn't do anything super great and still won 45-0. A lot of short fields, which helped, but they had, in the passing game, 212 yards of offense from Kyle Kemp. He was the starting quarterback, and he threw the most, 13 of 20. Zeb Nolan, 5 of 9 for 90 yards. So trying to figure out who's replacing Jacob Park there in Ames. But rushing the ball, 106 yards, those aren't gaudy numbers. Like, they didn't put up a whole lot of numbers, but 45 points. It's crazy. Kansas punted the ball 13 times, and Iowa State was able to – they had none inside the 20. Iowa State was able to win this field position battle, and that's how you win games like these, but somehow 45 points. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy that they were able to do that in a game with not a whole lot of offense at all. It's the numbers just – I almost feel like they're lying to you. Iowa State had the ball for 36 and a half minutes. So there's how you're able to score 45 points without, you know, getting a whole lot of offense. Oh, here's a question. All right, thanks for this question. This is from Paul at PBNJ Dominico. What are your 3 quick fixes for our special teams? Well, first quick fix, in my opinion, is Evan Staley needs to be taking all of our kickoffs. and needs to be kicking them as far as possible. He had 3 touchbacks on the day on 8 kicks. He needs to be getting touchbacks every single time, and he's proven he can do it. So he just needs to do it. Don't play around with it. Just kick it in the end zone every time. For the punting issues, I don't want to say they're issues necessarily, but Billy Kenny needs to be healthy. I don't know if he's healthy, but when he is, he's fine. I mean, he needs to, I think his health has hurt his ability to kick the ball we were able to last year. I mean, he punted the ball pretty decently well last year. He needs to get healthy. But I think on the return game, we still are lacking. I mean, Marcus Sims is fast, but we haven't shown a great ability to break a punt yet, and we need to do that. And I think what it comes down to from a special teams point of view is someone has to be willing to lay out a guy on a block. Someone has to be willing to stay in their kick coverage lane, if you will. They need to do a good job of staying in their lane, in their space of their area of responsibility. So if we're quite doing that, because it feels like we have a lot of guys kind of running everywhere right now. On the return side, though, it comes down to making tackles, right? We've struggled with this as a team. So quick fixes, make your tackles. This is a offense and defense thing. Other than that, look, kick. Mike Molina's okay. We know what we're getting from him. Get it inside 40 yards. He's pretty good. Evan Staley needs to kick the ball out of the end zone every single time. There are your 3 quick fixes. I appreciate everyone calling your questions on Twitter tonight. Very much appreciate you guys interacting with the show. Again, thanks, Paul, for that question. 3 quick fixes for special teams. We will be back later this week. We will probably have a podcast coming out on Friday to preview the West Virginia versus Baylor game. That is an 8 p.m. kick. So a good chance for West Virginia to show in a primetime audience that we are a decent football team. And hopefully against a team that is not very good, we're able to show it off even more. So look out for that episode coming later on in this week. This has been a live episode of the Smoking Musket Podcast. We will do this every Monday following a game. You can call 917-932-1765. Follow at Smoking Musket on Twitter. You can follow me at BartimusPrime19. And go to www.smokingmusket.com for daily news and notes on West Virginia sports. So again, we'll talk to you again later this week, probably Friday, for the WVU Baylor game. I am Bart Keeler for the Smoking Musket Podcast. Thanks for listening. And as always, goodbye, buddy. Hope you find your dad.